Along with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A couple of days after having big chunks of the roof blown away, and it is beautiful here in the hills and hollers of what yet remains of almost level West Virginia. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Conversation radio unlike anything you have ever heard before, unless, of course, you've been listening to The Horn for a while, in which case it's something that you've come to expect and recognize that you're not going to find anywhere else. Right? Right. Almost 2 minutes past the hour, and, of course, we've got, we've made it to Wednesday. I think I'm finally caught up. Yeah, it's Wednesday, right? Right. Hump day, middle of the week, downhill to Friday, all of that claptrap that goes with it. But, of course, as well, being as this is The Horn, and being as I am a recovering Southern Baptist, who will never be fully recovered, well, that can mean only one thing. That's right. It is, in fact, Prayer Meeting Wednesday on The Horn, brethren and sistren. Hallelujah, glory. That's right. Brother brother Minister of Music, if you would come forward to lead us in the offertory prayer. We're going to pass around that big old heavy brass plate. Please don't make change in the collection plate. It's just a little bit tacky doing that. But do note, in the bottom of that collection plate, there's an address and a PayPal button. The PayPal button is easily used, and it goes to keep The Horn on the air, as does any love offering sent to the mailing address. If you can't read the fine print down there in the bottom of the love offering plate, you can always go to headonradionetwork.com and click the tab called Contribute, and you'll find out everything you need to know right there. So as the plate passes around and the deacons do the only work that they know how to do, we'll ask the Minister of Music to please lead us in our opening hymn on this Prayer Meeting Wednesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, into the Cathedral of Common Sense on this, a very special prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Now quit shilly-shallying around out there in the parking lot of smoking with the sinners and the deacons, and get on in here. Come on down that blood-red aisle, and get on your knees in front of the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer, and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Superior Imam, Exalted Rabbi, Noble Lumpkin, Mysterious Elder Shaman Bob Kincaid, and this is your prayer meeting Wednesday outreach. Outreach. Hallelujah. And let us begin this prayer meeting Wednesday, brethren and sistren. Get out the snakes. Uncork the strychnine. Begin the prophesying and the translating and the floor rolling and the speaking in tongues, because they's done been a miracle. A miracle, brethren and sistren, and I am a-telling you that it's true. Brethren and sistren, Glenn Beck is gone. Glenn Beck, the folks over there to Radio Rwanda ain't said exactly when, but Glenn Beck is a gone gosling. Glenn Beck is out of there. Glenn Beck ain't going to be all paranoia all over the TV tube no more. Oh, he'll do some paranoia once in a while, but not a lot of it. The news came down today, brethren and sistren, thanks to the work of apostles, dedicated apostles like Stop Beck, our dear friend Angelo at StopBeck.com, who waged a one-man missionary campaign to remove Glenn Beck from the airwaves. Glory. Ho! I think I want a copperhead in one hand and a cotton mouth in the other. It is so miraculous. Glenn Beck is to be no more on Radio Rwanda. Hallelujah, praise. Get on that floor and roll around, because God knows he did. Rumor has it that all of his props, his chalkboard and his hand puppets and stock puppets and stick puppets and whatnot, are all, and then that frog that he boiled, that pot that he boiled the frog in, yeah, it's all going to be delivered for an exhibit at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium. Absolutely, brethren and sisters, I would not tell you otherwise if it were not so. The news broke earlier today. And so apparently after quietly and anonymously telling the New York Times that Radio Rwanda was contemplating life without Mr. Beck, they got done contemplating, brethren and sistren. They raised their gaze up from their navels and stared out into a brave new Beckless Radio Rwanda world. Oh, there's... I will read to you, without editorial comment, the statement that appeared on Glenn Beck's website today, but then suddenly disappeared. Fox News and Mercury Radio Arts, Glenn Beck's production company, are proud to announce that they will work together to develop and produce a variety of television projects for air on the Fox News channel. I promised I wouldn't editorialize. I didn't promise I'd read it right. As well as content for other platforms, including Fox News' digital properties. Glenn intends to transition off of his daily program, the third highest rated in all of cable news, later this year. Glenn Beck said, I truly believe that America owes a lot to Roger Ailes and Fox News. I cannot repay Roger for the lessons I've learned and will continue to learn from him, and I look forward to starting this new phase of our partnership. It went up. And it came back down. No telling why. except for the fact that Captain Conspiracy is absent, oh, something on the order of a third of his audience, which says a boatload all by itself. Consider, I mean, this was running on Fox News, you know, Radio Rwanda. One-third of Fox News viewers, again, I reiterate, Fox News viewers, not known for their estimable sanity in the first place, or intelligence, but one-third of them walked away and went, oh, he's too crazy. He's just nuts. He lost a third of his audience. But where for-profit media are concerned, what was far more important was the fact that he lost all of his advertisers. Except maybe the Buy Gold Now crowd. Yes, the temptation, brethren and sistren, is to celebrate and make all manner of joyful noise unto the Lord. Lord, Flying Spaghetti Monster, pick one. But I think we should temper our exaltation. I think we should temper our joy, our celebration, and our praise. Why? Well, it's that one line in there that I ran across, and you heard it. Produce a variety of television projects for air on the Fox News Channel, and this is the part you underline, as well as content for other platforms, including Fox News' digital properties. When Keith Olbermann left so unceremoniously from MSNBC, what did he do? He went to the future. He went where the horn has been all along, the internet. Because it really is the future. You know, that's why there is, for instance, a Progressive Voices app out there for your iPhone that aggregates all things liberal in one convenient application that you can navigate easily and purchase for only 99 cents. None of which goes to me in any, or the horn in any way. But we are linked as a link. We're not there on the talkers page. But we are a link in the links section of the Progressive Voices app. And that is the future, really and for truly. Had a Facebook conversation going the other day with someone looking for the horn on TuneIn Radio. I don't know if he found us or not. But we're there. TuneIn Radio is available for free on Android, and you know, 99 cents or $1.99 on the iPhone. That's the that's the Steve Jobs tax. Somebody's got to pay for that liver. So don't be surprised if Glennie, as our buddy Stopbeck Angelo so lovingly refers to him, not. Don't be surprised if Glennie doesn't ramp up his online presence. You know, he's got that one little website that he charges $10 a year for. A man's that rich and he's still charging for content. Wait a minute. Who's got it wrong, me or him? We don't charge for diddly here, and we simply rely on you to do as your wallet and your heart feels is right. Whereas Glenn Beck has millions and is sitting there squeezing $10 a year out of people who are silly enough to pony that up to read the crap on his website. Whew. I don't know. Maybe he's got it right and we've got it wrong. I'm sure what we're doing is commercially wrong. But you know what? I can't wrap what we're doing here at the Horn up in a bunch of commercialism. That's why we're here. That's why we're not for-profit media. This is listener-driven liberal media. But nonetheless, don't be surprised. I mean, those are, you know, Dr. Evil-level evil geniuses over there at the building that houses Radio Rwanda, Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch and all those filth merchants. And they are forever looking for an angle. So maybe they'll send Glenn Beck off to the internet gulag for a while and see if they can wring a little bit more money out of the credulous, the mouth-breathing, the knuckle-walking, the helmet-wearing, the oatmeal-dribbling. Because, you know, earlier I said that they, the folks at Radio Rwanda stopped gazing at their navels. Well, the fact of the matter is they did. They quit gazing at their navels and they started staring at their wallets because there was money flying out of them. You see, in the world of for-profit media, it doesn't matter how popular you are. You know, Glenn Beck, having lost a third of his audience, was still outdrawing just about any other time slot, you know, in the news realm. He never did get around to beating SpongeBob SquarePants, but then again, SpongeBob SquarePants is funny. But he still had a lot of viewers. Arguably, there are a lot of viewers who can't quite figure out that computer box that Junior's got down in the basement. But don't be surprised if Roger Ailes and company don't try to use Glennie as the wiggling worm on the hook to drag Emery and Eileen over to the interweb tubes. It's not a big truck, you know. It's a series of tubes where they can wring a little more cash out of the silly and the credulous. I'm almost tempted to say I'll miss him, but I won't. That's like saying you miss being able to see the open cesspit in your backyard every day. Because once it's all covered up, and no, you don't miss it. But just for the fun of it, a few lines of the paranoia that rolled out of Glenn Beck's mouth. Union leaders want to destroy the Western way of life. I don't know if that means that because of union leaders we no longer have those little swinging half doors in front of the saloon. I don't know. After pissing and moaning about the fact that President Not Sure had said that he was going to close Guantanamo, and then, of course, didn't, Glenn Beck suggested just a few days ago, just yesterday as a matter of fact, that President Obama had decided to try suspects at Guantanamo in order to inflame the Islamic world. You know, because when George Bush did it, well, that wouldn't inflame the Islamic world. Why? No. Hell no. But then again, I think if... Well, let it go. I mean, these are all quotes from yesterday. This isn't the Obama is an angry black man with a deep-seated hatred of white people. No. Let's see, he linked 9/11 to the Wisconsin election and budget cuts yesterday. He referred to students protesting in Wisconsin as useful idiots, Lenin's useful idiots. Said if it was up to him, he would put people from the SEIU, other unions, as well as President Obama, in jail. I mean, we're talking about some world-class crazy. This is not the Midland stuff. So it'll be interesting to see... See what the overall response will be. You know, there are people on the right wing that despise Glenn Beck. Rush Limbaugh despises Glenn Beck. More than anybody else on the planet, however, Michael the Savage Wiener despises Glenn Beck because Michael the Savage Wiener has repeatedly said that Glenn Beck stole his shtick. In fact, he refers to Glenn Beck as the hemorrhoid. I think there's a possibility that David in Tennessee may take one for the team and report back on the opening segment of the Savage Wiener. Savage. Ultimately, though, it was the paranoia, wasn't it? Maybe somewhere along the way we'll have a greatest hits of Glenn Beck reel and we'll run. No, I wouldn't do that to you. It serves. That's entirely gratuitous. That's like, that's like unartistic porn. But I couldn't resist, as I considered the story, I could not resist sending it because I am, after all, an old DJ at heart. Got to send out a long-distance dedication to Glenn Beck in the hopes that he'll take it to heart or not. After all, he hasn't been thrown off the public airwaves yet. That should have been done first, but the public airwaves? No, he still got him a radio show. And paranoia will flow out of there, well, like a mighty sewer. So this is going out to, you know, I hate doing those dedications after we come back. Can't anybody bring me into a dead dog story with a down-tempo song? God, sorry, I just love that Casey Kasem clip. I watch it about every 3 days or so just for the giggle. Now, a long-distance dedication for Glenn Beck, from all of us in the family at the Horn. This is for you, Glenn.
Met a girl called Lola and I took her back to my place. Feeling guilty, feeling scared, hidden cameras everywhere. Stop! Hold on. Stay in control.
How can you not? I mean, that's the Glenn Beck anthem, isn't it? That's Destroyer from the Kinks back in the early 80s, I think. 1981, 1982, somewhere around in there. Yeah. Destroyer. 25 minutes. Yep. 26 minutes after the hour. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And let's see. A couple of story updates for the evening. By the way, a $10 Thrifty 250 contribution just came in. Thank you very kindly. It is much appreciated. A few more of those, and we'll be done with fundraising for the week. Okay, who am I kidding? A lot more of those, and we'll be done with fundraising for the week. But thank you. Thank you very much, because it all counts. What was it? If we get to the point where we get 250 $10 contributions, I shut up. I stop with the fundraising. Wouldn't that be nice? David in Tennessee noting, actually, Bob, Beck's demise is not without some second thoughts. He blew up his audience by proffering bad entertainment. The grinding and grinding on the blackboard and the glasses and blackboard and drunk at the end of the bad BS, that drove his audience away. Had that effer been the talent he thought he was, he could have kept the fish or audience of his hooked for decades. Please see Rush. He does do a better performance than does Beck. Then again, as Benedict noted in the chat room a couple of minutes ago, if you just know Glenn Beck from his TV persona, you don't know how crazy Glenn Beck is. His radio crazy makes the TV crazy look sane. But yeah, the grind. I love the way David puts that. Grinding and grinding on the blackboard, and the glasses and the blackboard, and the drunk at the oh, you know, it was kind of like watching the right wing version of some sort of crystal meth tweaker. I guess Beck's contract runs out sometime in December or something, and after that. That's probably when he'll kind of disappear. Or move on to those digital projects. Oh my, I think it may be one of those musically celebratory evenings on the Horn. Ron and Raleigh just wrote in. My feelings after hearing Glenn was kaput? This tune was my first choice. Oh, everybody wants to be a DJ now, don't they? And you know what? I think that's really cool. Everybody skate backwards. what's the appropriate potable for celebrating crazy going off the a little bit more crazy going off the cable? Is that champagne? Or is it in the cave? You know, really, do you celebrate the demise of absolute, just batshit crazy with Mad Dog 2020 and a little Sprite, perhaps? Kind of hard to say. I guess we'll have to make it one of those pick your poisons nights. Okay, Benedict's the hardcore. He's going for the ethyl alcohol. Straight to the Everclear. Then again, Glenn Beck is pretty clearly a wood alcohol kind of guy. I'm sorry, you just got to have a little fun with this. We'll get into the serious stuff in a little bit. Oh, you guys are in rare form in the chat room tonight. Cat from Canada. Like Beck with glasses will make him less nuts. Yeah. No, other serious stuff to consider. And a happy little update. By the way, I guess she's got about a 250-vote edge at this point with all precincts reporting in Wisconsin. Judge Prosser appears to be the loser. And it would appear that Assistant Attorney General Joanne Kloppenberg will be the next Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin, creating a so-called liberal majority on the Supreme Court in that state. Understanding, as we do, that there really is no such thing as a judicial liberal, because all judges exist for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is preserving the status quo, the difference only being a matter of degree between which portion of the status quo they hold in the highest esteem. But yes, as of 2:15 p.m. Central Daylight Time, the Associated Press had tallied results for all of the state's 3,630 precincts. This, according to, this is our second day citing the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Journal Sentinel, had tallied all 3,630 precincts, showing Joanne Kloppenberg with a 204-vote lead, winning in the end after the night had passed with that hateful old misogynist David Prosser having had a less than 1,000 vote lead. And that's another reason to celebrate, assuming that it holds. And the fact that it was so close is a little bit disturbing. That means that there are still a whole bunch of people in Wisconsin who actually want the Republican Party to just screw them silly. How else do you look at this? I think of our good buddy Albert the Sage of Southwest Wisconsin. And lo and behold, the entirety of Southwest Wisconsin was solidly for Joanne Kloppenberg. But the upper middle of Wisconsin? Not so much. I don't know about the political geography of Wisconsin, but it's a pretty even split. That means that there's lots of ignorant, benighted, hateful people left in that state. But if the vote margin holds, understanding as we do how essentially polite Wisconsiners are, will somebody please tell me the preferred thank you? Considering the politeness that largely pervades that society and that we've been told so much about, I would think that there were probably 204 people at least in the state who were utterly repulsed by the fact that a sitting justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and the fact that there were not massively more is rather shocking and, well, depressing, if you want to worry about our so-called civil society. No, who were dismayed by the fact that Judge Prosser felt it necessary to refer to Joanne Kloppenburg, again, a sitting justice on a state Supreme Court, referred to his opponent as that bitch. Really? That bitch. And then in an effort to rehabilitate him, he was brought on, a couple of days ago, he was brought on to Greta Van Plastic Surgery, Greta Van Susteren's television program to try to...
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Temper, you screamed at the Chief Justice, Shirley Abramson, that she is a bitch and threatening to destroy her. Now, there is no record of this on February 10th. February 18th, another justice, a woman justice named Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, she sends an email around confirming that fit of temper that you had, which you called her a bitch and threatened to destroy her, sent it not just to you but to others, and then she later released it to the newspaper. What in the world is going on in the Wisconsin Supreme Court that you're saying that kind of stuff to each other and snitching on each other and giving emails out and disclosing the private conversations of the state Supreme Court? What is going on?
Well, there's a lot to try to untangle there. We're talking about an incident that occurred more than a year ago. We're talking about something where multiple controversies came to a head at the same time. It was an explosive situation. I said something I should not have said and that I regret and that I apologize for. On the other hand, I want people to understand that I didn't simply go into a private conversation and suddenly pop out with this.
No, no, what? You thought about it?
Without any provocation. Things have been building up for a long time. So what you ought to know, Greta, is that this was in...
I love it. Because they know that their audience is rather dim in the first place, the folks at Radio Rwanda had to have a font down there in a real hurry that said, Prosser, I regret what I said, but this had been building up. Really? She called you a penis wrinkle? So you called... and by the way, it wasn't Kloppenberg that he called a bitch. It was Justice Abramson. So she called you a penis wrinkle, and you called her a bitch. No? No? She called you a pettifog and little pervert protecting asshat, and then you called her a bitch? No. No, you called her a bitch. That should be fairly obvious, but let's let the excuse-making terminate.
February 2010... I think 7 or 8 days after the incident, there is a memorialization of a conversation. It is not an accurate memorialization of the total events that occurred.
Oh, there were events.
So
she flipped him the bird, and he called her a bitch. No, not that either. But the font stays up. Prosser, I regret what I said, but this had been building up.
Point, Justice, at that point, I think they're trying to trap you. I mean, I'm not trying to defend you for calling any Supreme Court justice a bitch, but the fact that they...
Well, but you just did, Greta. Jesus. They were trying to trap you. You know, that's what they do, those feminists. They try to trap you. And they play that gotcha stuff where the only recourse you have is to say, you bitch! Pitiful. Pitiful. Yeah, they were trying to trap you.
They were setting a trap on you on that one.
They were not only setting a trap, they were kind of massaging the record and changing the record. I have to tell you, it was not good behavior on my part, but I have to say, this was not all my fault. There was some provocation here. The whole series of incidents that led up to an explosion.
Yeah, yeah. And many thanks to the fine folks at Crooks and Liars for grabbing that. That was precious. Thanks, John Amato. That was just precious. I was trapped. I was trapped. I, as sitting justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, was trapped into calling my colleague a bitch. I guess we should just be grateful that he didn't haul out the T word or the C word or the DS word or any of it, but because they can be trappy, those traps. Sheesh. Sorry about the little time away there. I don't know if the powers that be somewhere on the series of tubes don't like it when I criticize the fact that Greta Van Susteren's entire face can't move. I don't know what it is. Or if maybe they don't like me quoting Wisconsin Supreme Court justices when they call other members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court bitches. Yeah, I know it was tough. That had to be weird. One minute I'm there babbling away, and the next minute it's Greta Van Susteren on Radio Rwanda. A little bit of a shock to the senses, without a doubt. Oh my God. today is Michelle Bachmann's birthday. Jim. So, wait. Glenn Beck got canned on Michelle Bachmann's birthday? This is a bad day. And mark down April the 6th. Some right-winger will shoot somebody or blow something up next year in memorialization of it. Oh, Jim. Jim's apparently, got his gaydar tuned up. He sounds a little precious, too, doesn't Justice Prosser? You guys are just mean. I mean, wow. David in Tennessee saying, for one's Glenn Beck celebration, a bit of absinthe taken on location? You know, just saying. You don't want me doing a show with no absinthe in my system. I get great, you know, slicing off ears and stuff. Oh, that stuff make you nuts. The green fairy is rough. So, I don't know. I still like the idea of celebrating with Mad Dog 2020. I'm no elitist. Maybe a little Wild Irish Rose, a little Boone's Farm. Nah, Mad Dog and Sprite. I always favored the plum flavor myself with my Sprite, my Mad Dog Spritzers. Much to do this evening, much to do indeed. Like I said, we've got a bit of an update from yesterday. Remember how we talked about, and speaking of paranoia while we're at it, remember how we talked about Precious Bristol Palin, the teen mom who was advising people to abstain from having sex, and the fact that she was paid $262,500 for doing essentially nothing? Well, an anonymous representative for Bristol. Why is it everybody associated with the Palin camp is anonymous? Spoke to E! Online. Wow, have I ever cited E! Online as a source? Yeah, I don't feel good about it. This anonymous spokesweasel said the following, describing what Bristol Palin did for $262,500. I don't think Silvio Berlusconi paid that much money. She shot PSAs, print and internet ads, and did town hall meetings as well, and the money she made was an accumulation of all of that. This is not out of the ordinary for a celebrity to make an income off a charity they represent. If you do your research, you'll find that most nonprofits compensate their celebrity spokespeople, and Bristol's no different. He also said, furthermore, our Bristol source says, this is clearly something that was leaked by the same anti-Palin organization that says Trigg isn't Sarah Palin's son. Ooh, nice attempt at raising the deflector screens. But that's all. I'm sorry, that's all they had. Oh, she worked real hard for the money. My God, this program could be a veritable cornucopia. Cornucopia of opportunity, musical bumper music opportunities. And I'm not going to let this one go by either. No, hell no. $262,500 for a teen mom to tell girls not to do like what she did. Do as I do, do as I say, not as I do. Sing it, Donna. You can almost see the little beads of sweat forming on little Bristol's forehead. She worked so hard for that money. You know, take after take after take when the situation couldn't quite get the condoms out of his pocket fast enough. I mean, that's hard work. By the way, 501c3 charitable institutions have to file something called a Form 990. They're public. And it doesn't take a conspiracy to get hold of them. But you see, since it is prayer meeting Wednesday, I got a note that the Palins are fundamentalist Christian hypocrites. And consequently, anytime anything happens that is not to their liking, they have to say that it's either the work of the devil, some sort of a conspiracy. You get the idea. Because by virtue of being fundamentalist Pentecostal Christian hypocrites, they live in a world where they imagine that someone saying something mean about them is exactly the same as having big rusty nails driven through your flesh. Jesus told us we'd be persecuted for his name. He told us he'd be persecuted for his name's sake, and by gum we are, because people don't like it that Precious Bristol, you know, she's got a hungry mouth to feed. Little Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnston there. Thank you, Barkop. Love that name. That's two nights in a row. She's got a hungry mouth to feed. And what do you expect her to do? Go on the welfare? I mean, she was dancing her little feet off there. And that situation, you know he's Catholic, right? You know about those Catholics. This is the mental illness that is fundamentalist Christianity. Plain and simple. And that Bristol, she works hard for the money. So I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a little break and come back. It's right at the top of the hour. It sort of makes sense. Take a little break and come back with your phone calls to 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's how you reach the program. On your nickel, if you don't need us to pay the toll-free freight, you can always call 304-658-3333. It rings on the same set of buttons. It's just that easy. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
What I Means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, the celebratory solution for bidding a not-so-fond farewell to Beck and his Beckerheads. Keep rolling in. Robin Raleigh is intrigued by the idea of an absinthe-based celebration. While David in Tennessee has forwarded me a classic butt-kicking concoction from that pioneering punk band of the Northwest, Poison Idea. Get your notepads out. You're going to want to write this down. The Poison Idea Summer Thirst Solution. One 32-ounce 7-Eleven big one full of ice. Just ice. One Thunderbird short dog and one 12-ounce squirt. Directions as follows. Combine all ingredients, insert straw, and proceed apace. Repeat as ambulatory skills allow. That's just got it all over my Mad Dog Plum Supreme and Sprite. Oh, shoot. Poison idea. You know what? We'll just call that a poison idea. I was just emailing with our buddy Dennis in Kentucky, who has apparently forgiven me for rooting against Kentucky in the Final Four. And he's, I said, you know, that's why we, you know, Glenn Beck gone. That's why we devoted the first half hour of the prayer meeting to effusions of thanksgiving to the higher power who has taken him off the air. And Dennis wrote back and said, Bob, I hate to pick a nit, but lightning didn't strike him. Well, you know, these things take time. Mora, writing from New Jersey, suggesting some shots of Goldschlager. Because Goldschlager has gold flakes in it. Oh, that's good. That's good. You know what? I think we've got a lot of... we've got a lot of latent bartenders in the crowd, I think. And that's nice. That's nice. 8 minutes past the hour, and it's time we quit this fooling around and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Hey, what's up, Gary?
What's going on? So what's the latest out of Wisconsin? I know you know. I was on last night and a little today.
She's got a 204-vote lead.
Okay. And where did the last votes come from? Do you know? Did they say?
I can check.
Well, you don't have to check. I just...
No, I got it right here in the stack.
Because that's critical, as you know.
Yeah, right.
If it was out in the rural area, then that's a good sign for us.
It doesn't. The story I'm reading from the Sentinel Journal, or the Journal Sentinel, doesn't necessarily indicate where that last precinct was. They just note that AP, as of 2:15 p.m. Central Daylight Time today, the Associated Press had tallied the results for all 3,630 precincts.
Excellent.
They were all in, and she had a 204-vote lead.
You know, I went to bed last night. I was thinking, man, I hope this isn't another Blanche Lincoln or whatever.
Oh, well, you know, but it is. I mean, I hope the tally holds. But by the same token, it's a little bit disturbing, because when a guy has been that obnoxious, and when that much is at stake in an election, and the margin's 204. That means that there's still a whole bunch real messed up and sideways in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, it's a reflection of our nation. But, you know, we got to think, too. You know, I've been kind of following this, you know, a little bit. And it's, you know, Wisconsin, I mean, they poured a lot of money into that state, you know, talking about her and berating the woman, from what I understand. So, I mean, it wasn't, and this guy supposedly, you know, he's been there for years, almost 10, 20 years. And it's not like he's a new jack. I mean, for the Republican Party, so he's kind of part of the old guard. So I don't know. I think it's good. You know, I'll take, you know, take even, you know, at the end of a football game, you know, we look at the score. I'll take it. You know what I mean?
That's true. Win W column, L column, and hell with statistics, right?
Yeah. But I understand what you're saying, because you want to send a loud message as opposed to a whisper.
Well, I'm just a little bit surprised by the way that Wisconsin voters apparently reacted, because there were two solid things, three, arguing, you know, militating against this Prosser person. One, he was basically a water carrier for Scott Walker, and Scott Walker's numbers are caca. Two, the guy really did basically refuse to tolerate the prosecution of a pedophile priest.
Yeah.
And three, he called the Supreme Court justice a bitch. Now, how do you get half the state to vote for that? I'm not trying to be critical or anything, Gary, but I'm a little bit flummoxed. How do you get half of a state to vote in favor of that?
All that, man. I'm not surprised at that, man, because it's just that it's in Wisconsin, when you have just a great center there, you know, in Madison, and with the educated populace there, you know, it's a purple state. So I mean, there's some red there. I mean, it's just, that's what it is. I'm not surprised by them putting somebody in office, but I kind of agree with you. It should have been probably a little more, but the thing is, it is for because it's a nonpartisan position. Is that correct? When you go for that, it's not like.
Yeah, but you are allowed to know who's a what and what's a who.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, but it's not like when you go and you get a full straight ticket. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's kind of in some ways a special election. So, you know, it does take a lot to get people to come out for those things. You know, it's just especially Democrats. I mean, I think we're kind of raised that way, whereas Republicans are always interested in these little small, because they that's how they organize a lot of times, when these little, you know how they do. With Democrats, we've seen, and I can just say from the black community, we always kind of are more, not so much close to the local politics, unfortunately, unless you're like in Harlem or New York or somewhere, you're into it. But in some of these other states, southern states where I've been in, it just don't seem like they're way organized as much. So the Republicans always seem to be more organized in those states on a local level. And they just run shot over everybody down south. And a lot of the people down south, you know, are very Democratic, but they just get run shot because, you know, they're just not politically active so much on a local level.
Well, and that's the other thing, you know, going back to Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, which was the smartest thing the Democrats have done in about a half a century.
Ever done. The worst thing they've done was bringing that idiot up.
Tim Kaine?
Brought in. No, you know, Tim Kaine, no, he's bad, but the guy, what's his name from Chicago?
Oh, Rahm?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the whole point is that that weak organizing that you see in the South, you know, you can't, despite anything in the Bible to the contrary, you can't make bricks without straw. And you cannot organize on a massive level politically without a whole bunch of funding. And frankly, the Democratic Party has not seen fit to put much money into the Deep South. I personally think it's a mistake.
Yep.
But it's a mistake that is born.
That was great about Howard Dean. He said, look, these people got, we got to see, you know, we talked about this last time I called. It's like, we have the white kid down, you know, in the rural area, the black kid in the urban area, they got the same issues. They ain't got a job. So you're right. Why not go down there and bring the issues to them?
But the fact of the matter is, Gary, there is bigotry. There is bigotry involved.
Yeah, bigotry, of course.
Just conceding the South to the right wing. And that bigotry, and I got to admit, I'm still in the middle of Joe Bajant's Rainbow Pie, which I again urge everyone to read, and own it, and give it away, and because it's that important. You know, he talks at length about
his name again?
Joe Bajant, B-A-G-E-A-N-T. He just died a couple of weeks ago. But the name of the book is Rainbow Pie. And he talks.
Is that the same guy who wrote
Deer Hunting with Jesus?
Deer Hunting with Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. He talks very unabashedly about underclass shame, and about overclass attitudes about poor white folks and poor black folks. But, you know, him coming from poor white folks, that's his focus. And it's almost like he's touching on things that, you know, we're just not allowed to talk about. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we have lost, Democrats, liberals, progressives, whatever you want to call us, have lost our way in the South because of the inherent bigotry and inherent snobbery that we have about Southern people.
Yeah, and I think when you get really the problem with the whole tax thing, you know, is that, and no one will come out and say it, Obama, nobody will say it, you know, blacks, we can always kind of say it. I mean, we know the code is that the whole thing with the tax thing is basically like, you know, and I've said this many times, so you know this, is that, hey, it's really about we want to do anything we can to defund the minorities because they are living at us. But as long as a white person who is rich and wealthy, because that's what we identify with, even though there's blacks are wealthy too, who are going to benefit from any kind of tax deal or something that the Democrats do, it's still the stigma is blacks are poor, they're getting all these benefits, and we're not going to have it as white people paying these taxes, but we'll give it to our white brethren who are rich. You know, that's really what the tax
is. Yeah, and yet, even that...
is about that.
Even that, Gary, is so... it's not short-sighted, it's just wrong, because the vast majority of people collecting a welfare check, the vast majority of people, getting, WIC and food stamps and Medicaid, it's white folks. It's what the elites like to call po' white trash.
Yeah. Bristol Palin types. I mean, that's who's getting it. It's the single white females who get more money than, you know, out in the rural areas, like you said, for welfare than these black women. You know, Reagan made that whole stigma, you know, by bringing it up, and he played that, you know, took a card to a T.
And did you happen to see, Gary, did you happen to see that good old white concerned citizens council Haley Barbour dredged up the welfare queen again recently? Did you catch that?
No, I didn't catch it.
Oh, that was a beautiful moment.
I've been kind of watching him with the two black women down there, not, you know, not giving them a full pardon while he's pardoning murderers and.
I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong. It might not have been. It might not have been Haley, but I'm pretty sure it was, because the line that was given was, "We've got people driving up to the pharmacy in a BMW saying they can't afford their Medicaid copay."
He has to be careful because, you know, he's already in trouble now. Now he's trying to play the, or I'll put up a civil rights museum. You know,
yeah, but you'll notice he went to BMW now. If he'd said Cadillac, all the little lights and bells and whistles would have gone off.
Yeah, well, you know, they got the Southern thing going down there with Toyota and everything. So he got. Well, no, I'm just saying.
Yeah, you got to get the plug in. Well, BMW is in South Carolina, right?
Yeah. So are the Democrats going to cave again to Republicans? They haven't given them everything they wanted, and they still say that's not enough.
I'm scared to death that they are. I really am. You know, President Obama spoke today, and it's kind of spoke to me. He went to Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and did a kind of a town hall sort of thing at a factory. And the name of the factory was Gamesa, G-A-M-E-S-A. And they are a very, very significant manufacturer of wind turbines. Exactly. You knew where I was going.
Well, I've been actually looking at it because, you know, I'm trying to make some investments eventually, you know, down the line. I've been really watching solar and these companies. I think if I'm going to put my money somewhere, try to put it, not that I have a lot of money, but I want to have some money one day, so I think I need to start looking.
Well, you know, as Desi Doyen pointed out in the Green News Report last night, Gary, the fastest growing energy sector in the United States economy last year was solar. It grew at a rate of 67%. And that's, you know, that's with hardly any encouragement. That's with very little in the way of corporate welfare. You know, oil, gas, and coal still get all the corporate welfare.
Yeah. Well, my thing is, it's the sun. I mean, the sun goes out. It's over anyway. Yeah, I don't care about any radiation or anything else. I mean, if the sun goes out, I mean, who would be against it? But I'm sorry, but you were saying that, I cut you off, you were saying that Obama...
Yeah, right. So he's talking, and this was just one of those little for-profit media moments. I happened to be watching on MSNBC, and I tweeted about it, as a matter of fact. They had just taken a question He'd finished his remarks, and they were taking the microphone around, and he was going to take questions from the audience there. And the guy stood up and said, "Mr. President, thank you for being here today. We're all really glad you're here." You know, this sort of the introductory BS. And then he said, I want to ask you something about sustainable energy. And I kid you not, Gary, the instant the words were out of his mouth, the babblehead anchor at MSNBC potted Obama down and started talking over him about whatever it was she could manage to talk about. It was so flippin' obvious, it wasn't even funny.
So it wasn't so much he wasn't talking about Libya, wasn't talking about that. It was just that sustainable energy, we're GE, or whoever it was. Good night. It was that kind of thing.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was not lost on me that it was MSNBC I was watching, and they potted him down the instant that he wanted to talk, that they thought that Barack Obama might talk about clean energy solutions going into the rest of the 21st century. Goodbye! You know,
years ago, a friend of mine who worked, when she started working with the CIA, she told me that, you know, she would tell us, you know, tell you things, and then after a while she just shut up because they don't, you know, once they really get in there, they can. But she said, that was years ago, she told me that there are certain keywords on, you know, on the phone that would light up, you know, them to, you know, they're listening. You know, whatever it is and that, they'll immediately, you know, reroute the calls and listening.
Yeah, see, we can make things light up.
Same thing there.
Right, we can make things light up over at the National Security Agency by saying something like, you know, I tell you, Gary, my grandmother's brownie recipe was the bomb.
Yeah. See, and this was years ago. I mean, this was years ago. It was probably for this technology. So back then, now that's nothing. But back then, that was...
Yeah, but Agent Fred just ran over and grabbed his earphones.
Yeah. But see, yeah, but I'm saying, so you're saying, I'm thinking that, hey, when you say sustainable energy over the networks, they immediately trigger some kind of thing like a beep.
Oh, yeah, like little lights start flashing. Get away. Oh, no. Because, see... the same thing happens over at CNN, because what's running over there? Well, look, it's a clean coal commercial. Look, it's the people of natural gas, the people of the oil industry. Did you know the oil industry provides over umpty bajillion jobs every year? And you know what? When you're paid to run that crap, when the stuff that actually happens in the real news is talking about your competition, broop, it gets turned down. And it happened today.
I'm not surprised, and that's really what we're dealing with. See, this is why I really was saying, you know, I've been pushing this thing, you know, and I where I'm at on this. You know, we go back and forth on this, but I think everything's starting to come a little clearer. Really got to stop thinking that we can have one person save this situation. That's why I like Wisconsin. I'm so glad Obama didn't get involved in that, because it's up to us to do this. This is, you know, when they say yes, we can, we keep forgetting about we, and we thinking about me. It's not up for one person, not for the president, or even one Democrat or Senate, whatever. It's us, the people. What they're doing in Wisconsin, to me, is proof positive of how we need to go forward. I mean, look at the Tea Party. Look what they're doing. They're about to shut the government down with 200 people. I mean, on one side, I'm like, why can't we push our side? You know, why can't we push the Democrats and Obama and them to do exactly what we want? What is, you know what I mean? That gets to me. But I think the problem is that we don't have, like you said, that localized base. So they're not hearing the message when they get out. To me, that's what I think it is. But what I see in Wisconsin, what could happen now, you get that local stuff going.
Yeah, but by the same token, Gary, consider, yeah, this goes into what we were just saying about the for-profit media. You got 200 babbling idiots who are about to demand that the government be shut down, and they're going to be acceded to. On the other hand, 2,000 people marched on the headquarters of Koch Industries over the weekend, and no for-profit media at all showed up. None. Zero. Niente. Zip.
Well, one thing I did notice when they did the thing about the Republicans, the Tea Party showing up, they did continue, well, at least CNN did, and I think MSNBC, I know CNN did, I don't watch Fox, so I don't know what they did, but they did say that it was barely anybody out there. They went to, especially CNN.
But they still went.
A little left lately, I don't know what's that about, but I've been noticing that. They've been a little harder on the Republicans than they used to always kiss their butt, but they seem to be, I don't know what that's about. you know. You know, I think part of it is because they don't have a candidate running for president, so I think that's the issue. But, you know, I just find that very interesting that, you know, that these Tea Party people, who are backed by a lot of money, so we shouldn't try to...
There we go.
They're really backed by money. So that's the reality of it. It's not 200 people, $200 billion. You know.
That breaks out real generous.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's the situation that we're dealing with.
And I agree with you in large part, Gary, about the fact that we need to take the, you know, yes, we can part more seriously. By the same token, we do need for Barack Obama not to peremptorily surrender.
See, I read his book when he first came in, and one of the reasons why I didn't initially go for Obama, I was kind of leaning more toward, you know, John Edwards, because I just didn't see that fire in him, which I saw in Edwards when he was like, "I'll fight," and you know this and that, because I was kind of leaning more that way. But as time has gone on, you know, I've kind of changed my little point of view on Obama a little bit in terms of the thing is with him, you know, this is my personal opinion, is that it's like there are some people go to a football, and this might be a bad analogy, you can tell me, but, you know, you're in football, so there's some people go to the game, you know, they like the majesty of it. Like when you watch a Michigan-Ohio State game, the horns come out and everything, and they appreciate that. They're not really interested in the in-the-trenches lineman fight like I am, maybe you are, the play-by-play. Doesn't mean they're not interested in the scoreboard, who wins in the end. But some people are just more, a little bit above it.
They like the theater.
They like the theater of it. And I'm telling you, when you read his book, and even when he gets into his whole thing about Reagan, because he goes into this whole thing about Reagan again, and how much we hate that, but I was reading about how he really was kind of impressed, when he was a kid or whatever, with the way that he was talking about the military and the majesty of the military. So immediately when I started reading that and I was thinking about it, he likes the act of government in like you were saying, he thinks everything should be, you know, done a certain way, people should be dressed a certain way, and they should behave a certain way. And he wants to be the mature, logical, pragmatic person who gets things done, and the government is running smoothly. I mean, that's what he came in when he's talking about he wants to change the way Washington works. He really believes that stuff. I mean, he really believe it. Now, I don't think that's not going to happen, but he wholeheartedly believes that, and he's willing to sacrifice some of our democratic principles to get the government to a point where it's a respectable institution. And that's what Obama really is trying to do, you know, ultimately, is try to change the government the way it functions on a more moral, whatever level, not moral, it's not the right word, you know what I'm saying, a more functionable level where people, you know, respectful and we work things out logically and fairly. And that's just not where we are right now with the Republicans. And I think when he did that whole thing about the hostage taker, to me that was just kind of a revelation that he knows who he's dealing with. He understands the Republicans literally will run the car off the cliff, as a lot of people have been making this analogy. So he feels like he has to give as much as he can just to get anything from these guys. But I don't think he's under any illusion of who the Republicans are.
I am disturbed by, and it's not, again, not just Obama, Gary. It is the way that the entire the so-called Democratic Party has been suckered into this frame. You know, we don't have to play in somebody else's frames just because they set the frame up. We can set our own up.
Exactly.
And thus far, Barack Obama and the entirety of the Democratic caucus in both the House and Senate have insisted, even with good data on their sides, have insisted on playing within the frame that the Republicans set up, that we have a debt problem. And I think it's Sandra who has said repeatedly, we don't have a debt problem, we have a revenue problem.
Exactly. We have an income problem. Anybody in business knows you got to have income. You know, any business, if you want to expand your business, you got to reinvest in your business. That's business 101. You know.
Yeah. The reason we're running the budget deficit we're running is because back in 2001, and again, where are the Democrats? Why is some little the podunk internet broadcaster like me talking about this, but the hot shots aren't. In 2001, Gary, George W. Bush insisted that we cripple the ability of government to do government's job with his tax cuts for his pals. We have not recovered, and we will never recover as a society until that philosophy is out and out, openly and full-throatedly rejected. And thus far, if anything is frustrating me, it is the fact that from Barack Obama on down, we're not talking about the revenue problem. We're talking about the debt problem that doesn't exist, that the Republicans insist does. And that makes me a little nuts.
I know, and this is why I said this problem was here before Barack Obama got in. Barack Obama represents the Democratic Party for all its failings. And that's why he got elected. That's why people voted for him, because he fit that mold that the Democrats are already operating in, which isn't great as it is. They still got the moral and the principles. I think they still got the moral and the principles. That's what keeps them afloat, because the moral and the principles long-term works out for the better, whereas, you know, what the Republicans do is very destructive and eventually exposes itself like it does in Wisconsin. But here's the thing, with all of that said, is that, you know my congressperson is Donna Edwards. Now, she's great. You know, she's great, very progressive, and, you know, supporter. And I've been to a number of functions with her and met with her, talked to her. And we had gotten to a little bit of a stink one time doing a public option thing. I told her, I said, you know, the public option was the worst name they could have came up with, because it sounds like public housing, which sounds like anything in the ghetto, which sounds like X, Y, and Z, and, you know, whatever. And I said, anything with public stigma has sounds like public housing or whatever. I said, why don't you guys come up with a better name, like Medicare, Security for All, just anything, but not public options. And she told me, because they got to have options. People want to have options. I said, see, this is the problem with Democrats. No, people don't want to have options. People just want to know one thing, what, you know, just very singular. When you put options, now you're complicating the matter. You know, now people are thinking, well, what are the options? You know, it gets confusing that way. And she couldn't understand it. She tried to defend it. She knew I was kind of right, but some people were kind of laughing in the forum that we're in. And, you know, they're clapping everything. And so she knew I was right and probably a little pissed off about that. But it was very pointed, because it said the Republicans always come out with things like death panel. Whatever they do is absolute when they say it. So people go, uh-huh, I got it, and they walk away. I mean, that's what made Bill Clinton such a great politician, because I've seen him speak a couple times in person. He could just make everything plain, like Malcolm X used to say. They say Malcolm X make everything plain. Barack Obama and the Democrats, Barack Obama especially, can't make anything plain. Everything
no.
It's kind of like...
No, Barack Obama is one of those technocrats whom, if you ask him what time it is, will tell you how to build a watch.
And who's the worst of them is Harry Reid. He's even worse than Obama. But that's the Democrats. They cannot message. They can't keep a singular message. That's why they keep getting out message. I mean, some of the stuff I could create in my sleep to tell them what to say and not to say. Like you just said, they should stop saying that. They should just come and say, no, we have a revenue problem. Revenue, revenue, revenue. When Barack Obama came out, he was talking about investment. That was good. But you don't hear investment anymore. It's like they never stay on point. They come up with something good, then they'll move on to something else. It is amazing to me how they can't stay on message.
Well, and that they won't insist on debating on their own terms. I mean, my God, we still control the Senate. And Harry Reid, still not getting the job done. You know. Still not getting the job done. Gary, it's been a great conversation, and I thank you very kindly. I've got a bunch of blinking lights that you stirred up, so we will move through them. All right, take care, Gary. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Calling from Maryland, that's our buddy Gary. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
So, yeah, they're having a sort of nighttime meeting. So anytime, you know, Obama requested Boehner and Reid to the White House for a meeting, and anytime that happens, I'm sorry, you know, I'm scared. I'm scared. What is he going to do? What is he going to give away? You know, what is going to be negotiated here?
Yeah, surrender time?
Well, I don't, you know, I'm just saying, it's like, what is the plan? Because the Democrats aren't able to put forward anything, you know? So they're on their hind legs going backwards, you know, trying to come across as keeping the government open. as opposed to attacking the Republican plan of slash. But see, oh wait, you know, they have no moral authority because they're bombing another brown country. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And it's just like, so I'm scared about the outcome of this. I mean, the shutdown of the government is just, it's craziness. But
you know, the there's no one, the Republicans have almost made a brand out of support the troops, right?
Yeah, they don't give it. They don't care.
Well, guess what ain't going to happen if they shut the government down?
Yeah, no, it's true. But I must direct you to, I don't know if you got my email, but the whole Gang of Six thing that's going on and how the Cat Food Commission is going to be the compromise, I swear to God. If you look at Ryan's budget, it's so out of control and so way up north. The Cat Food Commission starts looking good, and that's what they're going to throw on us.
Yeah, at least it's not as bad as...
Yeah, so, I mean, the whole... And so, I'm sorry, I don't... You know, all of this seems like design to me, because if the Democrats were concerned about the 90% of us, or 99%, they would be talking about, not investments, that's an okay word, but a revenue problem. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You know, that's an easy soundbite. But the Democrats aren't talking about that because, as far as I can tell, they're right on board with it.
Right, because they've been suckered into that frame. You know, I've got Benedict in the chat room over here saying it ain't even a revenue program, a revenue problem. He says the idea that the government requires revenue to operate is a neoliberal fiction that's been used for three decades to hollow out the middle class. We don't need revenue to operate the federal government because we have a fiat currency. Federal taxes serve only, says Benedict, to establish and maintain the value of the currency.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You know, but then it becomes a political question then. You know, who gets what, when, and how, which is the definition of politics. And what we're seeing now is the most powerful segment of society, which are the rich people, dictating policy, and the rest of us aren't included. So, neoliberal, whatever you want to call it, the money is there, but it's not being utilized the way it should be, except for when they want it to be, like when they bomb brown people. I'm sorry, it's just sort of like...
Because it always kind of is there when they want to bomb brown people.
And also, people have already forgotten that, oh, wait a minute, the Republicans had all sorts of money to give this tax cut to the rich in around Christmas time. You see what I'm saying? That's why the whole thing is so absurd. And, you know, I agree with the guy you just...
Benedict,
in the
yeah.
chat room. Yeah, I mean, it is, it's kabuki. Because we do have the reserve currency, and like any sovereign country, if they didn't, you know, we don't have to, but if other countries like Ireland didn't want to participate, they could say F you and print their own damn currency. So, yes, that's true. If you want to operate as a nation state, yeah, this gibberish that we don't have enough, it is so much bullshit. I agree. That's true. But we're not operating in that realm. We're operating in a theater where everyone else has to sacrifice because the rich people have decided, no, that's how it's going to be. And those are the people who fund these fake politicians.
And are you not about just ready to vomit, Sandra, every time you hear the for-profit media say, well, Representative Ryan certainly has done a politically courageous thing. He has reached out and touched the third rail of American politics.
No, listen. No, it's what I'm saying. It's all just disgusting because that Ryan, you know, he just wants to destroy what little safety that we have. I mean, that's all it is. The whole idea that this is something brave, it's brave for those people who control the corporations and the money class. I mean, you know, I hesitate because it seems so simple, but this is where we're at. It's us and them. And I'll tell you one thing about the Ryan thing, if you want to put another perspective on it. I don't know if you noticed that article about how, oopsie, the white kids are going to be dwarfed by the growing brown minority much quicker than they thought. Don't tell me that that isn't what this is about, too. Oh, my God, the rest of the country is going to be brown in a generation. We sure in the fuck don't want no safety net here. So let's get rid of it.
Yeah, because maybe they'll die off.
No, no. I swear to God, that's what the, you know, the whiteys are not interested in paying for a bunch of brown people coming up. That's another element to this.
Well, did you happen to notice, because it was getting a lot of traction today, I saw him on a number of different networks, NAACP President Ben Jealous.
Oh, I haven't watched, no, I've just...
Well, he's, they're touting a new report out about America's prison industry.
Are they actually talking about prisons now in any sort of meaningful way?
Yes.
Okay, because you know it's out of control. What are they saying?
I don't have it in front of me. I meant to look it up earlier. Screwed up, didn't. But I caught him showing up on, and, you know, it was just a real treat to watch him talking to all those pasty people. Well, I mean, there were a couple of persons of color there, but on Morning Joe. And it was obvious that he was kind of nervous, I think. And he was expecting to be pushed at by right wingers. But it's, the essence of it is that our mad fetish for imprisoning people for things like nonviolent drug offenses is counterproductive. That imprisoning people for that winds up making worse people out of them than they were to begin with. And taking mothers out of homes and imprisoning them winds up and sending the children into foster care just makes the problem grow exponentially. And he was talking about some of the comparisons that they had done along the way. He said, we took highly imprisoned communities and compared them to not wealthy white communities, but similar communities of color that just didn't have the same imprisonment rates, and the numbers are stunning. And he brought out some other stuff that actually probably matters to white people. For instance, that 30 years ago, law enforcement solved X percentage of murders. But 30 years later, with our the war on drugs and so forth, that number has gone from X percent of murders solved to X minus 30%. And he says it directly correlates to the amount of time and law enforcement time and resources that are put into these dumbass drug cases and offending nonviolent drug offenders.
Oh no! I mean, anyway, I know people are trying to talk rationally, but once again, you could add the racial component, because the statistic that just blew me away is the fact that more black children had two parents during fucking slavery than they do now.
Jesus.
You know,
there was another statistic that he hauled out that sort of made the entire round table go, ooh. He said, who uses crack? Everybody around this table is going to tell me that it's some 19-year-old black kid with his pants halfway down his butt. But the fact of the matter is, the primary users of crack in this country are white males of semi-middle class status.
Well, right. So then, once again, the issue is, you know, warehousing people of color. I mean, there's so many issues around what the prison incarceration is doing to the black community. I mean, it's just decimating the family unit. And now you have this pig, this felon, this criminal in Florida turning back whatever headway they made on giving felons the vote. Have you heard about this?
No.
Okay. Before, in Florida, you know, if you had a felony, you lost your right to vote for like 5 years or something like that. But Chris made a big deal of rolling back. So you had like 1.2 million Floridians who couldn't vote before Chris made the changes. And he was only able to re-enfranchise 100,000 people. Well, this felon is in here now, and he's rolling that back. And not only that, if you're just arrested, Bob, you will have it reset.
Save.
Jesus.
Not processed, but just arrested. This is the thing, yeah. It's like, hello?
So the right to vote just fizzles away on an arrest, on a charge?
Right. But the problem, the only upside, if the Florida law works the way it's supposed to, is that they will automatically be challenged federally because they fall under the Voting Rights Act. You know, they have
right.
a number of states that are, like, looked upon like, oh, no, you need to get permission.
But, God, if that thing holds up, the next Republican president that gets in with a Republican Congress, well, hell, they'll just run out and bust us all for jaywalking or stream littering, and ain't no Democrats going to vote no more.
Yeah, well, Florida is particularly egregious. I mean, even in Alabama, it's only certain crimes that people lose their right to vote. So Florida has to be one of the worst. And the sort of resetting the clock on your waiting time for not even being processed, I mean, it's incredible. We talked about how Florida was just going to be a real shithole with this guy. Man, he's...
Yeah, and it's going there in a hurry.
He's as bad. He's worse than what I imagined. But, that story really kind of...
I just saw a remark here from our blogger, Texas Betsy Sandra. She said, they'll arrest us all for sending emails containing the word Maddo. You know, out of that story out of Michigan.
Oh, shut up. Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, listen. I mean, I guess they would be all over her, you know, but...
And all over us, by extension.
Yeah, I don't, yuck. You know, I didn't see that. I didn't see that segment. I heard about it, though.
Well, I can't imagine a FOIA request that looks like this, where they requested that professors, I believe it was, academics disclose all of their emails concerning A or B containing the word Maddo. How do you fulfill a FOIA Act request like that?
It's just crazy. But that's funny about Glenn Beck. I guess they couldn't. I think it only takes so many puppets. They couldn't take any more of that, huh?
No.
And he lost, like, what, 300 advertisers or something?
Well, he lost every advertiser and lost a third of his viewership. So even, like I said, Fox News stopped gazing at their navels and started staring at their wallets.
Well, yes, I'm saying, at the end of the day, you know, bullshit walks, so we're back to that again. And
yeah, Rupert ain't going to subsidize no long-term loss leader.
Oh, no, I know, but it's, I mean, he had wound down anyway. I'm not surprised, but he still have his hateful show on the radio, right?
Oh, absolutely. And again, as was noted in the chat room, if you think Glenn was crazy on TV, you ain't lived till you've heard the radio show.
Well, speaking of crazy, is Bagbo still there? Is he hanging out in the presidential?
They were digging down into the basement last night. I haven't seen the latest update.
I don't even laugh, but it's just like, you know, more power to the people. They're like, damn, we elected somebody else. Get the hell out. You know what I mean? I mean, I hope they're able to consolidate. You know what I mean? That's the problem with these situations in Africa. But I don't know if I was talking to you, but I thought I had mentioned that, you know, there's been a sort of sea change in Africa where when people have elections now, they're like, damn it, we want what we want.
No, yeah, we've had the phony baloney ones. Now
right.
we want the real one.
And
well,
so I'm just hoping that this one will, you know, the death and destruction already is horrible, but I'm hoping that when they get rid of him, the man who was elected will be able to take his place and, you know, preside over the whole country and not have a...
Well, are you up for one of those good old-fashioned screams?
A what?
Well, because, you know, they had a legitimate election. Everybody under the sun said that Bagbo was cheating.
Yeah, no, straight up.
Right. Well, never mind the facts. The right wing in America, including crazier than a sprayed roach senators like Jim Inhofe, leapt to Bagbo's defense.
if it wasn't so pathetic, are you kidding me?
No, from the, you know, from the department of what, you know, of we're going to get it wrong no matter how hard we try. I got 46 seconds for you. You think you can stand it, Sandra?
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine. No, I'm just confused. I don't understand why.
Okay, well, I'll explain it in a minute.
So again, I'm going to renew my request to Secretary Clinton and to the State Department and to others who really care about the loss of innocent life in sub-Saharan Africa, specifically in Abidjan in Cote d'Ivoire, to come forward and help us in this hearing to find that justice is done. I hope that President Gbagbo and his wife Simone, good friends, I hope they're not dead today. They might be dying as we speak. They're raiding their residence, they're raiding the palace, and it's a brutal mess. So I don't think I've ever seen in the years that I've been here, particularly coming from French, supported by Sarkozy, the raid on innocent lives in sub-Saharan Africa.
What happened to the election? I'm sorry, did we miss the election?
Yeah, that...
Listen, no, that was... When, you know, these people, they saddle up to these horrific, wow, a good friend. Now we're talking about his wife and...
Yeah, no, they're buddies. They have spent time together. You remember C Street and the family?
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what...
Well, there's another one on C Street.
Yeah, no.
It's called The Fellowship.
That's the one that Hillary is all up in.
No, she's family.
Oh, family. Okay, I was thinking.
No, this is The Fellowship, and, like, they've spent time together at their little boarding house.
Oh, right. Well, see.
But see, we still haven't gotten to the punchline, this being okay. Prayer meeting Wednesday and everything. The thing is, no matter how corrupt he is, Gbagbo is deemed to be a, Glenn Beck called him the current Christian president.
Oh, see, I didn't realize it was that kind of party. Come on.
And Ouattara is described as the Muslim challenger, supported by Obama.
No. I don't care what his religion is. He got elected, and that's all I'm concerned about.
Pat Robertson apparently dropped a little bit more blotter acid yesterday after doing some of those, you know, milkshake leg presses or whatever that he does.
Mm.
And he said, the overthrow of President Gbagbo is a great tragedy. Now, Cote d'Ivoire is going to be into the hands of Muslims. So it doesn't matter. You know, they'll support the Christian, even if the Christian's out there eating babies.
Well, I mean, no matter how complicated, and all of these countries in Africa are complicated because they've been sort of the way they were willy-nilly divided up by the various colonial powers. Nevertheless, they are making attempts to have elections, and I'm looking at You vote, and whoever many votes win, their supporter takes power. I'm not looking at it any other way. And I realize it's fairly simple, but I'm sorry, how else are you going to begin the process of democratization in a place if you don't accept who wins the election to start out with?
You know, it really is kind of a simple process, though, Sandra.
What the fuck, man?
You know, you add up, it's kind of like Gary was talking about how, you know, what's the score at the end of the game?
God damn. I'm just sort of, yeah, but they're so creepy, these really fascist African leaders and their connections with the fellowship and the family and all that, you know, because the one in Uganda where they want to just kill up gay people, they got all kinds of connections with Christians here,
and they've poured money. I mean, they've salted money on the, they've salted money on the right wing of the United States Senate, like it's like they're French fries. And what you heard from Jim Inhofe is what that kind of money buys.
No, but the source though, God, he's just sort of, he's like, what do you call him? Crazy as a sprayed cockroach.
Yes, crazier than a sprayed roach.
Right, well, that's, he falls into that category. But I'll let you go, but I'm concerned about this meeting tonight. I just wonder what's going to come out of it, you know. Because didn't they already agree to...
Well, if they walk out smiling and shaking hands, check your wallet.
Oh, no. And a quick little update with Japan. So they so-called stopped the leak, but then they're injecting...
liquid glass.
No, but nitrate or nitrate or something into the...
Well, yeah, it was some sort of concoction that they had decided to call liquid glass, and that was what finally stopped the leak, they claimed.
No, but no, that, but they're also injecting nitrogen into the reactor because they're scared of more explosions.
Yeah, so they're trying to reduce anything that could provide oxidation potential for the stuff. And I don't know, is it liquid nitrogen? Are they trying to freeze it?
I guess. I don't know, but it just still means that, you know, they don't have any mechanized cooling going on there, I guess.
No, none of that.
Anyway, not
even a box window fan.
Yeah, I'm glad they so-called stopped the leak, but you know how we are with that. I just think of EP, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing is I keep... Again, it goes back to framing and messaging. You know, these dumb bastards want to shut down the government, Sandra, and yet nobody on our side is just kind of, you know, pecking with a fingernail on the glass going, well, you've shut down the government, who's going to test the seafood?
Well, in Canada, they're not even going to test the milk. Did you hear that story?
No.
They're like, I don't know what they said, unless something else happens. You know, basically by osmosis. So these poor people in Canada are just drinking the milk without the government even testing the stuff. They refuse to.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to get off the milk for a little while or get the stuff out of the boxes.
Yeah, and I'm scared, like you said, if the government shuts down, not only the seafood, but the two... Geiger counters they got working right now. I mean, I read another article. More and more of their instruments aren't working.
Yeah, because they're pegged. It's not that they're working, they just can't measure.
No, they can't measure probably because the shit's so high. No.
Bingo, yeah, that's why I'm, just because your speedometer's gone all the way over to 140 doesn't mean it's not a speedometer anymore. It's just past its measurable range.
Right, if your blood pressure is so high, this whole
thing in Japan started with an earthquake and a tsunami. Well, guess who else is going to get furloughed? The United States Geological Survey, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, you know, all those things that monitor stuff like earthquakes and tsunamis. And I remember, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, I forget which insane Republican it was, Sandra, but when asked about precisely that, said, well, you know, I don't think we need to get hysterical about this.
Oh, of course. Yeah, oh my God, please. Well, you know, I didn't realize that the, I wonder if there's some sort of election shenanigans going on in Wisconsin, because why is that race close?
Well, that's the question I've been asking.
I just wonder if something's going on with the counting and the voting machines or whatever they use there, because they said that 19 counties flipped to the Dems in this one election yesterday.
Well, maybe that was that Wisconsin decency kicking in, but if that's the case and all she's got is a 204 vote margin, then that's still pretty frightening.
Well, no. On the other hand, no, but she only had 25% in the primary, though. I mean, how much has she, how much has he increased, though? Look at that.
Well, okay, I didn't know that. That's true.
Yeah, no, yeah, if you look at it like that.
Well, I just got one of those emails. I get Brad Friedman's emails on a fairly regular basis, and, you know, Brad is the guru of electronic voting shenanigans. And Kloppenburg leads Prosser by a remarkably thin 204 votes out of some 1.5 million ballots cast in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, and then ... according to the computers that count votes in the state.
Right, see, and it's just, I'm sorry, because as a percentage, you don't get that many people in the street. It shouldn't come out that way. It should have been a much wider margin of her victory. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Is it because these races are nonpartisan by definition, do you think?
I really don't know. But like I said, I am glad that she's ahead. But that means it's an automatic recount, right?
I would assume so.
I wonder how long that process takes. It doesn't really matter. The longer, the better, because it just means...
Well, no, it's not necessarily the longer, the better, because right now, you know, with neither of them on the bench... And I don't know how long the term lasts, and that's another one of those little...
You mean they still will just bring the case anyway?
Yeah. And I mean, if there were six people there, they'd maybe appoint a retired circuit judge to sit on the court.
It's three, four, though. So if he doesn't participate, I guess is he sitting now this time?
Yeah, he's sitting now.
Oh, so he would still be able to participate? No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I don't know when they take office.
Yeah, well, they also are talking about daring to re-vote it again. That would be interesting.
Who wants
to redo his budget again?
Oh, Jesus.
So that's another thing I was reading. I'm like, damn, they really, I don't know. I don't really know where that's going, but... I'm kind of a bit disturbed by that voting thing, too. Although, like I said, she did come from 25% to where she is now.
Well, that answers the question that I was putting out there earlier, and that is, you know, why is this margin so narrow?
Yeah.
Because this Prosser guy is a real creep.
But didn't he call her some sort of bitch or something?
Well, no, he called the Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court a bitch.
Okay, I knew he called some woman some horrible... term. I didn't know it was someone sitting with them. What kind of environment is that?
Toxic, apparently, but I played some audio a little bit ago. He went on Fox last night to explain that it was all their fault. They put me in a trap. They trapped me into calling her a bitch.
Oh, yeah. So they always blame somebody else, these whiny-ass conservatives.
Well, yeah, it's like that old line about, what's the biggest problem that abused women have? They just don't know when to shut up.
Oh, God.
Well, that's the same thing. I mean, it's a nasty old one-liner, but...
No, that's...
But it's the same thing. If she wouldn't have been assertive, if she wouldn't have done her job, I wouldn't have had to call her a bitch, now would I?
Yeah. Well, so it looks like Michelle Bachmann might be running for president, right?
Oh, yeah, she's... And it's her birthday, too.
That's just going to be... That's gonna be popcorn.
Oh, I'm looking for Sam. And by the way, she's not taking personal responsibility either. Apparently, when she got caught thinking that the shot heard round the world was fired in Concord, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
She said, "Well, I've learned my lesson. I'll never do what Barack Obama does. I'll never use a teleprompter again."
Listen, but she's the one that said that the founders took care of slavery, right?
Yeah, and she's the one that said that the Germans used U-2 boats.
Oh, well, no, I won't call her crazy. I remember David from Maine saying about that the Republicans aren't crazy, but...
No, they're not crazy. They're evil.
She's too much, but I will enjoy her sort of machinations as opposed to Palin.
Yeah, because there's something not quite as... evil about Michelle Bachmann. I don't know. She's got... It's kind of like the marbling of fat in a nice steak. She's got marblings of just plain stupid that somehow make her more tolerable to watch be stupid. But make no mistake, she's... Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Oh, but by the way, this again, since we're talking about Republicans, and I'll let you go in a minute, but this is too precious not to bring up. Did you hear about the Pawlenty worker in Iowa?
No, what's that about? I didn't get the whole deal. What's the deal with
him? Oh, this is beautiful. You know, Tim Pawlenty's trying to be out there being Mr. Early Response, trying to build some name recognition. Nobody knows who the hell he is in New Hampshire, but he's got campaign workers going in Iowa. So, you know, he's putting out videos about the fact that he puts out videos now. Just constant, just putting stuff out there. And so he's got people in Iowa beating on doors. Well, last night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, in a nice little sedate neighborhood in Iowa,
yeah,
somebody just starts banging hell on the back door of this house, and a 15-year-old girl goes downstairs, walks to the back door, and this arm is reaching through the door. Let me in there. Well, it turns out it was a Tim Pawlenty campaign worker.
Drunk?
Out of his freaking mind. Drunk. Went out and vomited in the yard.
So he just popped up from there.
Well, he was lost. Because he was a Tim Pawlenty worker from, wait for it, Alabama.
Oh, of course.
Lost in Iowa. You know, is this the bar? No, it's Iowa. And he'd gotten to the wrong house and was trying to get in so he could go to bed. And so they had to call the cops, and the Tim Pawlenty organization doesn't have any further comment at this time. But I just love it that Tim Pawlenty from Minnesota, remember when he was doing the audio of, yeah, where he was trying to sound all redneck and stuff?
Right. Yes, yes.
Well, apparently it worked because he done scrounged himself up some Alabama conservative values voters to knock on doors in Iowa.
Oh, God, that guy is so, I mean, he has about as much charisma as a thimble. He's awesome.
But I just, the thing is, though, the guy is, and maybe because, you know, I'm a southerner and stuff, but, you know, you kind of got that experience, too, so you speak the language. Dude is lucky to be alive. Because if somebody had come barreling through the back door in Alabama, they wouldn't get a chance to add, you know, no, they'd be dead. Alabamian is shoot them dead. And then call the police.
No, I mean, even in our little neck of the woods, that fool would have had a knife in his neck, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to be that explicit, but, you know, everyone's on edge.
Yeah, but those nice, polite Iowans, you know. The little 15-year-old girl saw him, ran back upstairs to her parents' room, and just stood there screaming and didn't stop screaming.
Well, listen, whatever she had to do.
Yeah,
out of the, you know, danger, God, it's starting up. I mean, what is it, 2 years away, isn't it?
November 6th,
2012. Okay.
You know, they'll have the Iowa caucuses in what, March of 12? It's a year away.
Okay.
Can you believe it? It's a year away.
Oh, God, I'm just sort of, I feel kind of nauseous at the whole prospect of it. But anyway, I guess I'll let you go. I mean, I was trying to think of something sport-wise, but there's nothing funny going on. It's really quite dry.
Well, yeah, it will be until the Tiger Woods sightings start down at Augusta.
Listen, I mean, it's like talking about someone who has, how a mighty has fallen. My God, they're ripping that dude daily.
Well, and the thing
funny,
is,
right?
at this point, he's like got the old country club drunk guy gin yips. He can't hit a straight ball. So,
well, I know. I guess I haven't really followed him, but I know that he's struggling along. But they're really sort of anyway. I guess we'll look and see how he does on that.
Yeah, and it'll be fun because apparently he's got a new girlfriend, and she's real blonde, just like his wife. So. Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, shit, can't teach a dog new tricks.
Yeah, and by the way, the denouement to the intruder, the Stewart family said Foster was drunk and was trying to get home to a friend's house in Johnston, Iowa. They said he vomited in their backyard and scared their daughter. Yeah.
Oh, no. Listen, like you said, cabin-y ass, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Back to the golf right quick. We almost had a Stuart Payne moment, though. You did hear about that, right?
No.
Well, some Lee Westwood's jet had like some sort of crash landing.
Oh, geez. You know, I remember. I grieved when Payne Stewart got killed. I mean, that was just...
Well, no, but that was a horrible, creepy way, too. It was hideous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it just went on autopilot and everybody dead. You know, ghost plane just flew off to North Dakota and...
I Anyway, so yeah. Listen, I'll just let you go on that.
All right.
Let
all
me
right.
know.
All right. Take it easy. Well,
all right. Bye.
Bye. Well, there. You know what? There is that. Sandra and I missed one. There is that story about what's going on with the grudge match between the NFL and the NFLPA. Pay attention to this. Even if you don't watch sports, pay attention to this because this one's actually kind of important. Because it's another classic case of right-wing nuttery. There's the NFL ownership. And they've decided that they're pissing and moaning because they've been sued by a group of high-profile NFL players, including Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning. And it's gone back to the court in which the original suit was filed back several years ago, which is natural and legal and proper within jurisprudential logic or procedure. Oh, but dear Jesus. Judge Nelson out of the St. Paul Federal Courthouse is an Obama appointee. And the owners are a-pissing themselves, hollering, liberal bias! Liberal bias! Left-wing communist! Probably takes money from George Soros! And accusing the Players Association of court shopping, otherwise known as forum shopping. When in fact they didn't. The case went back where a previous case had originated. In other words, they maintained the jurisdictional integrity of the case. Liberal bias! Yeah. I got to tell you, there's no small amount of irony involved in Peyton Manning being one of the principal... I side with the players on this, but Peyton Manning being one of the principals in the litigation. You know, this is a guy who gave thousands of dollars to Bob Corker, right-wing Republican senator from Tennessee. You got to figure, Peyton being Peyton, he probably gives Mike Pence the blue head rub rather than the old-fashioned handshake when they meet at the Klan meetings. Jesus. Oh, never a dull moment. Worth paying attention to, worth watching as it shakes out. Let's keep it rolling here. Not there. Well, I guess we won't. You guys have no patience. So, wait a second. Line ringing in. A little song for you. You'll enjoy this. The story came from the Tim Pawlenty worker story. Came from America Blog. They do a lot of great work over there. Headline: Drunk Pawlenty staffer breaks into Iowa home. I guess that's going to take a lot of starch out of that whole family values things. I thought only heathen, secular, humanist liberals got all drunk and stuff. Yeah, just to recap what I said with Sandra. 15-year-old girl found a campaign worker from Alabama banging on her Ankeny, Iowa family's back door early Wednesday morning. If John and I could turn stuff around faster than I'd like, we could do Sweet Home Ankeny. Chloe Stewart told KCCI she heard her dog barking around 3 a.m. and went to investigate. She said she found a man trying to get into the back door. His arm was in my back door trying to get in, and I screamed and went upstairs to my parents' room, and I continued screaming, said Chloe. Iowa political strategist Eric Wilson is a consultant for the Pawlenty Exploratory Committee. He confirmed to KCCI that Foster is employed by the Pawlenty Exploratory Committee. He said they are declining to comment at this time on the incident. But yes, the story was accompanied by a neat little piece of video.
Obviously, we have a rapist in Lincoln Park. He's slamming your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to rape us, so y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, cause they're raping everybody out here. You don't have to come and confess, we're looking for you, we gon' find you, we gon' find you, so you can run and tell that, run and tell that, run and tell that, homeboy, homeboy.
the man got away, living behind evidence. I was attacked by some idiot in the projects.
So dumb, so dumb, so dumb, so dumb. He's slamming your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to rape them. So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, cause they're raping everybody out here. You don't have to come and confess. We're looking for you. We gon' find you. We gon' find you. So you can run and tell that, run and tell that, run and tell that. Homeboy, home, home, homeboy.
You know, I don't know. I think maybe rule number one is that don't send Alabamians to do your Paul Lindy campaigning in Iowa. At least don't do it unless you're sure they're going to stay sober. Going right back to the phones in just a second here, but I got to share an email with you that came in from Kate just a few minutes, more than a few minutes ago, a little bit ago. Because this really is a valuable turn on how to look at the situation with Judge Prosser referring to his Chief Justice of the Supreme Court as a bitch. Email headlined "Contrarian Point of View." Bob, I have tried to refrain from making comment. Restraint of tongue and pen often serves me well, but I can't resist this one. My first response to the judge problem with his mouth in Wisconsin was, "You say bitch like it's a bad thing." When someone calls me a bitch, I take it as a compliment, thinking that I've gotten someone's attention, that someone is insecure and has something to hide, that I'm making a difference, rubbing someone the wrong way in order to get something worthwhile accomplished. If he was indeed provoked, more power to the sister. She got the desired effect. Bless his heart. You know how we say that. It's in italics here. Bless his heart. You know, that's you. The full version is, bless his heart, he's a goddamn dumb, he couldn't pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. All right. Kate on the front range signs off saying, well-behaved women rarely make history. Score. Back to the phones, and a couple of lines open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, and we go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Cassie.
Well, Cassie, how are you?
I am good, but I have about 10 different bones to pick with all of what's going on.
Okay.
Not you.
Okay. Oh, not me? Okay. I don't have to duck then.
No. No. Don't duck. But tell John Boehner to duck.
Brick's coming. John, incoming.
Because there are quite a few people under age 22 and over age 22 who work really, really hard and who work hard at school and work harder at school than he ever did and who deserve the scholarships and are not just floating along and being, what did he call us, parasites. Is that what he called it? I don't know what
he said. He said you're lazy.
Okay,
And you spend all your time playing on the Xbox and the Facebook.
Well, the Facebook, yes. But I also, you know, there's a lot of us who spend a lot of time working hard and who work jobs in as well as going to school and who work harder than he will ever know. And if he wants to look at non-lazy young people, please ask him to look at the Army and the Marines and look at what they're doing right now in Iraq and Afghanistan and everywhere else. And you may not like what they're doing because politically you and I may not like it, but you cannot call them lazy.
No. I don't think there's much, Cassie, there's no such thing as a lazy Marine or a lazy soldier.
Not after boot camp and not for more than, 10 minutes, ever.
It's really kind of against the rules, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
But, you know, John Boehner says that everybody, all you young people think you deserve to make $24,000 a year right out of college.
Well, excuse me, but if all of us young people had a dad who contributed to the Wisconsin governor, we could earn a hell of a lot more than $24,000.
Well, okay, now let's not beat up on the poor lad too badly, Cassie. You know he got a pay cut because of all the commotion that got caused when his hiring went out there. And I guess I'm partially at fault. He had to take a pay cut. He's only making $60,000 a year now.
Which, last I checked, $60,000 a year is a little bit more than $24,000.
Yep.
And how does he expect us to pay back student loans if we're not working?
No, well, that's the thing. You're not supposed to be in college. He doesn't expect you to be in college. He doesn't expect you to have student loans. You got to understand, John Boehner's still mad, Cassie, because Barack Obama, and it was a good thing, Barack Obama and the Congress managed to get it through such that the student loan program is no longer a cash cow for the banksters. And he's mad. Boehner's mad about that.
And that's because all of the Republicans only want to help giant business who pays their bills, and they do not want to help real Americans.
Well, no, they want Tripp and Trey and Muffy and Buffy. They want them to go to college.
Okay, that's my next point. Can we talk about Bristol Palin?
Oh, we sure can.
How much is she earning for talking about abstinence?
The check was $262,500 even.
Okay, that's more than $24,000 also.
By a factor of about 10.
It did not take her a year to make that stupid commercial or to sign her name at whatever thing that they sent her to be the celebrity. And how is she a celebrity anyway? She's a celebrity because she's a single mom. How can a celebrity who's a single mom?
You know, maybe we need a
celebrity about abstinence.
Cassie, maybe we need a new word for it. You know, Andy Warhol said in the age in which we live, everyone will now be famous for 15 minutes. She's famous that way. So maybe we just need to coin a new word. Instead of the word celebrity for people like Bristol Palin or the situation or the circumstance or who's that one that I want to see hit by a bus?
Snooki.
Yes, Snooki. Maybe we don't call them celebrities anymore. Maybe it's a language problem. Maybe we just call them Warhols.
Yeah.
And just trigger that whole 15 minutes of fame thing. Everybody understands that's what Warhol means. And they're just a Warhol.
Well,
because she's not a... You know, this is a kid who, only because of her mother's influence, dodged a drug rap and a burglary rap. You know, there was that story out of Alaska a couple of years ago about how she and Levi and a bunch of their pals broke and entered a house, and it was all, you know, it was an attempt to steal either OxyContin or meth or God, you know, pick one. And she dodged it. But, you know,
But you're not allowed to say that, Bob, because if you talk like that, then you're criticizing good Christian people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I should be ashamed. But I'm not. Because they're good, you know, they're good Christian fundamentalist hypocrites. Emphasis on the word hypocrite, right?
Yes. Okay. Another hypocrisy about these people that is making me crazy. All of these Republicans, when it's the 4th of July or it's Veterans Day, are all the troops, the troops, the troops, the troops, the troops, and God bless the troops, and I can't end the speech without saying God bless the troops. But if they shut down the government, Congress gets paid, and the troops don't.
No. And let's say that there's some Secret Service agent out there, or an FBI agent, or whatever that's on a stakeout. Well, they don't get to leave the stakeout, but they don't get paid.
Will they get back pay?
I would assume so, but I don't...
Do they not get paid that month, or do they not get paid?
As long as the government shut down, no check. And I don't know what the back pay status is. I would assume that they would, but, you know, maybe not.
So how is it that Congress gets paid?
They are deemed to be essential personnel.
You proved to me that any member of Congress is more essential than the FBI, the Army, or any of those. You know, and I know that...
Yeah, see, I'm not taking the bet, Cassie.
You have your problems with the Army. And you have your problems...
No, I have... No, I don't. I don't. Right. I have a problem with war. You know, I come from old hillbilly stock, Cassie, and if somebody invades our shores and starts marching up my road, I'm going to get my 12-gauge out and go get busy, because that's how we are.
And you're going to want a trained battalion who knows how to fight them as well.
Absolutely.
And you're going to want some FBI agents to investigate how they got there.
Quite possibly, yes. And I'm going to want some, and I'm going to want. You know what? I'm thinking we can get.
How many congressmen do you need? How many congressmen does it take to declare war? And can't Obama declare war and then they have 60 days to put Congress back together and then agree to it?
That's kind of the way the War Powers Act works, yes.
Okay, so then we don't need Congress. We can get in.
Well, I mean, let's be realistic, and I'll go ahead and include you in this as well as me. But I know for a fact, Cassie, that I don't have a congressman. I don't have a representative in the House of I do not have two senators in the Senate of the United States, because my senators and my member of Congress, they are wholly owned subsidiaries of the coal industry, and they don't care what I have to say.
And I still vote in Texas.
Right. So I'm not sure whether you've got a congressman or not.
Some days.
Right.
Some issues some days, but I don't have any senators. And I for sure don't have a governor. Okay, Texas, governor.
Rick Goodhair Perry, yes.
Okay, go back to governor.
George W. Bush.
We had a governor who was absolutely 110% awful. And we sent him to become president, and now nobody will even acknowledge that he ever existed. Right? Because it was that bad.
Right, because he's got to lay low to allow the name to be rehabilitated for his baby brother. You know, James Carville said, and, you know, sometimes I discount him, frequently I discount him, but this was very true. He said, if Jeb Bush's name was Jeb Smith, he would be the Republican front runner right now.
Okay, so one of the people who is the Republican frontrunner is Governor Christie.
Well, but he said he won't run, but...
Yeah, but he's fine. He is every bit as bad as the Wisconsin governor or the Texas governor. He wants to take New Jersey and put New Jersey in the toilet. He wants to turn New Jersey over to corporations and not cooperate with other states and dismantle all the unions, and he's just horrible. And I can't live in a state again that sends a horrible governor to go be president. I will fight against him so hard.
You know what? It does my heart good just listening to you, Cassie. I haven't talked to you in a while. But in many ways, you've grown up before our very eyes, ears here on the Horn. But now I hear you, and there you are. You're attending college. You're at Princeton. You're in New Jersey. And all of a sudden now, you care about... Not all of a sudden. I'm not... But you care about New Jersey politics.
And I'm not even allowed to vote here.
Right, but that's awesome. Because it means that we've known for a long time that the light's on. But you know, you're taking seriously the fact that everything is part of it, as the saying goes. And you're living in your moment there, and I'm just inspired. I really am.
Thank you. Can I say one more thing before I go?
You can say anything you want. You know that by now.
Well, thank you. Okay, so the other thing, one of the reasons that Boehner doesn't like the 22-year-olds and the 22 to whatever 27-year-olds is because now we're like special citizens because we can stay on our parents' insurance. But this is only for people who A, have parents, B, have parents that have insurance, C, have parents that have private insurance, and D, parents can afford to keep them on their insurance. And there was a young woman in Boehner's district who was 22 years old who died last week. She did not have insurance, and so she did not go to the doctor until it was too late. Because what is it that we're supposed to do at our age? How?
Yeah. Yeah, your bullet.
Republicans think we're special citizens, but we don't really have access. There's a whole lot of us who don't have access to any health care at all.
It is absolutely... Well, you'd kind of like to see John... you'd kind of like to see the House Speaker worn out with that story. Do you happen to know the young woman's name?
It's on Think Progress, and... yes, Kimberly Young from Oxford, Ohio.
Say her name. Say her name out loud.
Yeah. Well, I need to blog about her. I need to blog.
Well, you know, you're kind of wrapped up with that whole college thing, aren't you?
I am.
And I would have a riot in the chat room if I didn't ask you to give us a Cassie at College update, please.
It's going really well. I like the classes. I like my professors. I am learning a lot. I'm thinking I might be pre-law. I'm not sure. I still have a year to decide for sure what I'm going to declare. I don't know what I'm doing. But I'm enjoying learning and I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
And that's still largely liberal arts, right?
Yes. But I will say that there are a lot more people at Princeton that want to judge you on who your parents are than there are, than there were in high school.
Oh gosh, yes. No.
Oh,
you're in a pretty elite pot of stew right now.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the couple of times that I've mentioned that my mom was in jail for 7 years, you can't imagine the look on somebody's face.
Oh dear, Muffy, I think we'll have to take her off the credit card, the Christmas card list. I don't think she'll be skiing with us at Stade this Christmas.
Well, I did go skiing in Pennsylvania for the first time. I did get to go skiing in February. We had a long weekend.
What, up in the Poconos?
Yes, in Homesdale.
Austin, Texas, young woman goes skiing in Pennsylvania is actually pretty cool. What did you think of it?
I loved it.
Against all your misgivings, being up there among the Yankee heathen isn't turning out to be quite so bad, is it?
No. But, you know, I will always be me, no matter where I go.
Without a doubt. Well, I guess maybe since you heard me talking about John Boehner and so forth, you probably have heard me talking at some length about Joe Bajant's last book, Rainbow Pie.
A little bit, yeah. I only get to hear the program. I hear in bits and pieces.
Well, since you are sort of being confronting the classism and the elitism that is camped out in the Ivy League, frankly, Cassie, I don't know how for you to get hold of it, but you're another one of those people who's got to read this book. Because, you know, I know, you're up there at Princeton and you don't have anything to read.
Right, but you know me, I'm not reading until summer.
Well, put it on the list, because here's how I want this to work out. I want you to read this book, and then I want you to pass it to the most elite, snobby, whatever, Ivy Leaguer friend you've got. With a great big, oh, you got to read this sort of recommendation.
Okay.
Because Joe's got a few needle jobs in there for those kind of folks, and how they look at people who have come up hard, or had to struggle, or you know, had to make their own way. And you might find I'm just guessing, you might find the responses interesting.
Okay. I will do that.
Wonderful. I am just so tickled to hear from you.
I will do that. Oh, one more.
You never write. You hardly ever call.
I'm sorry.
See, you have to do that. I got to guilt you a little bit.
Okay.
I don't even have an address to send care packages of Toll House cookies or anything.
Oh, I will give it to you. I will give you that offline. You would send me cookies?
Yes.
Okay. I'll give you my
message. I bet you there's a lot of people that would send you cookies.
Okay. I don't know if I want to give it publicly, but...
No, no, don't give it publicly. Just give it to me, and we'll set up the... and I will only give it out to trustworthy people, and we will set up the Cassie Cookies at College Fund.
Okay, cool. Okay, and then here's another question. If you were in a courtroom, or walking down the street, or doing a protest at your Capitol, and you called a judge a bitch, what would happen to you?
That kind of depends on where you are, frankly. The cops are supposed to tolerate that sort of thing, but as we descend deeper and deeper into full-on fascism, there's a good chance you'd get... Well, especially if the judge was, like, walking nearby.
Right. Right, that's what I mean. If like the judge is there and you say,
"Oh, if you're a liberal, if you are a liberal and you do it, oh, no, you're getting the plastic handcuffs."
Right, but if you are, what is it, a congressman? Who is that guy in Wisconsin?
Oh no, he was a sitting. He's a sitting member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Okay, and he sits there and makes excuses on how it's not his fault.
Right. Well, because
can you imagine if somebody came in front of him as a judge and said, "Well, but she said it first," or "But she made me mad," like.
Well, see, when a liberal, Cassie, when a liberal does that, that's called excuse making. When a Republican does it, that's called extenuating circumstances.
Well, I would like to
see the difference.
How long they let you get away with saying that, and then with explaining it on Fox News how it was the judge's fault and not your fault. I want to see how long that would take and how much that would cost you to say that when you get contempt of court.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it? Oh God, I can hear. I can already hear it in your voice. Yeah, you don't have to be pre-law. You can just be a philosophy major or an English major or whatever, and still go into law school. But no, I can hear it.
Your philosophy gets better after the first.
No, I can hear it. You're going to law school.
Does philosophy get better after the first semester?
No. Philosophy, yeah. You just chase your tail forever.
I thought I was going to like sociology, but.
No, sociology's icky and painful.
But I like sociology books.
Anthropology is cool. Sociology is depressing. Because, you know, there's no course sociology of happy people. It's sociology of population groups standing around with their barely beating hearts in their poor little hands.
Well, And is there a psychology class for psychology of...
Nope, there's no psychology of...
Well-functioning, well-developed people.
Sorry, no. That's what, you know, that's what... That's where Latin majors come from, you know. Oh, God, this is all awful. I'm just going to go read dirty Roman poetry.
I'm not reading dirty Roman poetry. I'm sorry.
Well, you haven't had enough sociology and philosophy classes then.
One of the things we did in my intro sociology class, we looked at the likelihood of different people ending up in different... going in different directions. Do you know that for somebody with my background to actually end up passing at Princeton is like 1 in 8,000 that could get from where I started to here?
But you're there and you're doing it, and based on that, I would run out and buy my lottery ticket the minute you hang up. You're beating the odds, Cassie.
I am, and I'm not stopping. I am still running for president in 2032.
You know what? I'm going to hang on for dear life to vote for you. Unless you run as a tea partier or a libertarian or something. Sorry.
Bob Kincaid, how well do you know me?
Pretty well, but, you know, you're up there among all those Republicans and stuff in Princeton. I just got to be careful. Just don't let them turn you.
No. Never.
Good enough. Well, you know what? We'll start printing the posters and, I don't know, maybe send some samples with the cookies for your approval.
Okay.
Cassie, it's wonderful to hear from you, dear.
It's good to talk to you.
It is. It's like getting a phone. It's good. Well, you know, I understand something a little better now. I really, really do, Cassie. And you've kind of brought it home to me. When back when, you know, I saddled up Bessie the dinosaur and rode off for college and left Alabama for Missouri, I'd get these little notes from my dad, my mom, cards, things like that. Mail's fun when you're in college because it's never a bill.
Yeah.
And it would say, why don't you call home more often? And I'd think, oh, you know, oh, I'm a bad person. I haven't called home in a while. But then somebody'd knock on my door and say, you know, hey, Bama, you know, we got the intramural softball game. Come on. Or you've got rehearsal in 15 minutes. Get with it.
And then you wouldn't call.
No, I didn't call. And by the way, Kate just dropped you a note from out in Montana. She says, Cassie... the email is slugged, well-adjusted happy folks. And it says, Cassie, the well-adjusted happy folks are called liberal arts majors. I are one. Do you? And Kate wants to know, do you favor chocolate chip cookies, or would you rather have oatmeal?
Chocolate chip.
Okay.
And I like peanut butter.
Oh, peanut butter cookies. Very nice, very nice. Well, we will. We will put together the Cassie at College Cookie Fund.
Thank you.
No, seriously. That was the other thing my parents did. I would show up every once in a while, and there'd be a box on my bed in the dorm. And my parents would
deliver it to your room.
Well, sure, they couldn't fit it in my little mail pigeonhole.
Right, then they give you a little yellow note, and you have to go back.
No, that wasn't.
And then four and get it.
But I'd open it up, and my parents would have spent 2 days baking. And my sweet mates in the dorm. Or my pledge brothers from the fraternity would descend on me like buzzards out of the air. It was like an undeclared holiday. You know, he got a care package. So I know what those mean. I remember well.
Okay.
Through the dim and fading mists of time. I miss my dinosaur. Yeah. Oh, okay. And David in Tennessee wants to know, is that 2032 or 2036 you're running for president?
2032.
2032. Mark it on the calendar. Cassie, take care. We're really proud of you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Cassie calling from far away Princeton. Hey, I'm going to cry. No, I'm not. I'm going to the next phone call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, first of all, in case, hopefully Cassie's still listening, a little bit of food porn.
Yes?
Does she by any chance like molasses cookies and lemon cookies? I'm not talking about those hard things that resemble.
I don't know that she's ever had them. But you know, so far all we know is that she likes peanut butter and chocolate chip.
Yeah, but that's why I'm mentioning it now. I'm talking about, I have a recipe for soft molasses cookies and soft lemon cookies, and they are just.
Well, what the heck? Let's let her try them. Let's break out of that chocolate chip box.
Yeah, let's try a little bit of porn here. Food porn. Okay, now, I also have to take offense.
What have I done now?
Not what you've done.
Oh, okay.
What the orange done.
Okay.
Yeah, they're lazy. Okay, my daughter, the teacher of advanced math, was told at a very early age, "Hun, if you want to go to college, you're going to have to get there on your own. There is no way on this green earth that I can help you." That girl worked 3 jobs every summer. And then when she got to school, finally did get to college, she had several scholarships. She worked her ass off at several jobs all the way through school. Both schools, both when she get her original degree and her master's. So don't talk to me about lazy, you orange. Yeah.
Well, you know, you raise a good point, Susan. A person gets out of undergrad, graduates with a degree in education, let's say. And they, you know, they go through their student teaching and stuff, and they go into a classroom. Well, how much does John Boner think that man or woman should make in their first year of teaching? Let's just narrow it into a range. More or less than the assistant manager at Taco Bell who dropped out in 10th grade.
My daughter took one look at what she would be making as an assistant teacher with a basic certificate and said, "Screw this, I'm going straight on to the master's."
You kind of gotta, don't you?
Yeah. And even then, it took her the better part of 15 years to pay off those student loans. Because she couldn't get a free ride. She couldn't get the full scholarship. That girl worked, her name is Ellen, by the way, she worked her ass off.
I don't doubt it. I mean, look at
a tiny, tiny little woman, and she can, with one eyebrow, can control an entire class full of jocks without ever raising her voice.
Probably without ever opening her mouth in some occasions. Just give them that,
yeah.
Give them that withering look.
She just gives them the skank eye, and man, you.
Well, she's, you know, she's your daughter.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody want to cross Susan.
But she's shorter than I am, and I've got a severe case of short.
Incurable, right?
Huh?
Incurable, right?
Oh, yeah, her father was short. I'm short. Well, what do you expect? But, you know, she's got this incredible brain. So what does she do? She goes and becomes a math major. And she wanted to become a teacher. Great. The only thing I told her was, you want to become a teacher, that's great. Just be aware, you're never, ever going to get rich. She said, that's cool. I said, go for it.
Just know what you're getting into.
Yeah, that's all I wanted her to do, was know what she was going to get into. Because as with her advanced math skills, She could do a lot of stuff. She could have ended up working for the CIA, but making huge amounts of money. But the thing is, teaching is what she wanted to do from the time she was a junior in high school.
And followed it.
Sometime. And, if I could have sat down and designed a daughter, that's what I would have come up with. And then have this Yahoo tell me that my kid was lazy.
Or should have been, and this one's out there too, should have been a ditch digger. See, that one pisses me off on about 17 different levels. We'll just start with like numbers 1 and 2. One,
if you're a good one.
Yeah, if you dig ditches, that means somebody needs ditches dug. This will be about my 253rd reference to Joe Bajan's Rainbow Pie. But there's a passage in there where he said the one time, and this, you know, this is the way it is in hard scrabble families. He said the one time his father ever complimented him was the day that he just about, and he was a teenager, was the day that he had just about broken himself digging a ditch 50 feet long and 3 feet deep.
Yeah.
And his daddy looked at him and said, "You did a real good job with that."
And
that stayed with Joe until the day he died. And there is, yeah, you know, that's why, you know, I ran that clip of Dr. King and the dignity of labor before, yeah, I got to John Boehner and, you know, you young people are lazy.
Because, my God, to anybody who's picked up a shovel and done any gardening, let's not even talk about the actually digging at a real live ditch. Jeez, the way you want to talk about hard work.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. One, it pisses me off. Yeah, it pisses me off because, A, he has no respect for ditch diggers. B, apparently people who work with the strength of their hands and the breadth of their back are somehow beneath Boehner's notice.
Well, of course not. Him in his several thousand dollar silk suit, he wouldn't, you know, allow
his $250 spray on tan. Sure.
Sure. I've got a message for you, John Boehner. Sit on it.
That smug bastard. I mean, in this upcoming, and this is what it's going to be. It's going to be, I hope, one of those staring matches. God, you know, as much grief as we give President Obama, and rightfully so, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I'm rooting for him to just turn an ice cold gaze on John Boehner and just wait for that orange bastard to blink.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's the son of a tavern keeper with 11 brothers and sisters, and he wants to demean and denigrate physical labor. Nah, you know, he can kiss it.
No, I would put him in a different category, the same category I put a pimp in.
Well, I'd put him in that lowest category that Dante had, betrayers. Because he's betraying the American people. He's betraying the people who work for a living.
And then, this bit with Ryan. I tried to call Ryan's congressional.
Oh, he's a genius, didn't you know?
Oh, yes. Just a genius. They're not answering their phone. They've just got a recording on, and the mailbox is full. So
right, right. That's the ultimate. That's the ultimate dodge. You're only
getting it cheerful.
The only choice you've got now is to send him a handwritten letter, and that takes 6 to 8 weeks to get all the way to Capitol Hill.
Yeah, it just blows me away. He has the unmitigated gall to think that the American people are going to stand by and let him get rid of Medicare, And then in the same bill, pass a huge tax cut for businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Susan, I got to run out of here, but good to hear from you.
Bye.
All right. Take care. See ya.
Love you.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and it is. We're at the end of the program. Where'd that go? They all just run past these days. And I really will. Drop me a note if you want to contribute to the Cookies for Cassie Fund. And what that means is that means that you pledge to bake cookies or some sort of wonderful snacky things for Cassie. And I'll give you the address, and you'll mail them to Cassie. Okay, that's how that works. It would be more than awesome if Cassie got several boxes and all of her dorm mates. Oh, my God. What are the plebeians sending you, Cassie, darling? Cookies, and you can't have none. Yeah. So send me an email, and we'll put this together. I think this could be kind of fun. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thank you to those of you who, one of you took up the spaces of 10 Thrifty 250 contributors this evening. Thank you very kindly. And two of you also took up the space of three more. So we're making progress. This is the 6th. Tomorrow is the 7th. Tomorrow will be Thursday. That'll be the close of the first full week of April. And we've got about 40 Thrifty 250 contributions. No, I'm sorry. 30. 30 Thrifty 250 contributions to go. Because earlier today, 12 slots were taken up by one of those people who insist on not letting the horn go dark. One of our contributors just said, I got really tired of the fundraising, so I thought I'd try to cut it a little shorter. Bless your heart. Thank you very much. And that did cut it a little shorter. Yeah, I can stop it all together if we get, well, we'll figure out the number, but it's not that many. You know, 180 Thrifty 250s. 180 people, $10 a piece. I shut up. Yeah. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, John Fox, Ben Birch, who make all the technical gizmos do what the technical gizmos do. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are the hardest working, bravest people I know. Drop by, have a look at the website if you haven't in a while. Just check in and say hi. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.